Interview with Roy V. Harris, Augusta, Georgia, April 22nd, 1974.
You've been active in politics in Georgia how long, Mr. Harris?
Well, federal government was investigating us when many years ago, and one of them asked me that question, and I said, ever since I was 19 years old. He said, well, suppose we start back there and come up to date. So I've been a little particular. I answered that question since. I landed in the legislature in 1921, and I guess that's when my beginning of my political activity and participation in state politics.
Now, we're actually going to begin the book basically with 1948. Were you involved in the Dixiecrat movement in 48?
Not
Strom Thurmond.
I supported Strom, but I wasn't mixed up in it much. Not like I was in the Wallace campaign or in the our famous senator that didn't get elected.
Goldwater's
campaign. I set up the organization that carried both Georgia for both occasions.
How old were you when you got elected to the legislature that first time?
Well, I remember they told me I was too young, and I was announcing I'd be 26 my next birthday. That was my answer to it. I didn't do like Ed Rivers did. He ran for governor about my age back there when he was 32. He said that his answer to the charge that he was too young was that he got you as soon as he could. I didn't think of that.
What do you think have been the major changes in Georgia politics since 1948?
Very little. Basically the same.
And that's what? You think Georgia still remains basically a one-party state?
Yeah. Well, no, we all Democrats, but we don't vote Democratic. We are fishing around, but trying to teach them all what, a little respect and tell them what we think about them, see? But basically, you know, we were known as the old county unit state.
Right.
We're still operating under the county unit system. Not in fact. legally, but what I mean in fact, that is that this state is still controlled by the country counties. In every election since they did away with the county unit system, the big counties have about 12 or 15 of the top counties split. And these country counties swing it one way or the other. They've elected, everybody's been elected ever since that way. And every one of them that have been elected have run on a Gene Talmadge, Lester Maddox kind of a platform when they got elected. We've had three that after they got elected on that kind of platform, three governors that went the other direction.
Who are those three?
Ellis Arnold, Carl Sanders, and Jimmy,
Carter?
Jimmy, the present governor. And all three of them. Now, Jimmy Carter, his platform was, he says, I'm just like George Wallace and Lester Maddox. Said all my people, Tom Watson people, and we've always believed that way. That's where he got elected, and he turned out to be the most liberal governor in the South.
How do you rate him as a governor?
Well, I've known intimately every governor since 1912, and he's next to the bottom. I say Cliff Walker was the sorest one, and he's the next Cliff.
What's your chief criticism?
How's that?
What's your chief criticism?
Well, he got no ability at all. He done a thing but make a mess. He's passed through some, he brags about his reorganization. But the next legislature's going to undo every bit of it just as quick as they can. I told him, he wouldn't listen at me, that I'd help reorganize the state government 3 times. And neither one of the 3 had ever stuck. Only 2 things we ever did in 50 years. And we created the present Board of Regents, and it lasted. That was the Dick Musselman's administration in 31. And in Ed Rivers' administration in 37 or 8, we consolidated all the tax collecting machinery in one department. And on all the other reorganization moves and reform moves, as soon as the next administration comes in, they go back. And all I can ever see they accomplished anyhow, you got rid of some officials and put your own crowd in.
You think reapportionment has had any effect on the legislature?
Yeah, it's had an effect, but it's still controlled by the country counties.
How do they exercise control?
They got a majority. Then here's the next thing is you take you take all these, take me for illustration. I moved to Augusta from after practicing law in a country county 12 years. All my background has been with the country counties. And back in the old days, Richmond and Chatham, that was Augusta and Savannah, played with the country counties. And they still do pretty well. One of my law partners, remember, the legislature from country county. Drives in here 40 miles every day. and it's still controlled that way. And the thinking. You take a lot of these legislative districts or in suburban areas, there's just as much country as in their thinking and voting as some county that's out here 50, 75 miles from any place.
People who live in those suburbs came from those country counties for the most
part.
Well,
the next thing is we've got a legislative district that my partner's in. I'd say he lives in he's got part of 3 or 4 counties in his district. He's got part of Richmond in his district. Yet his basic base county is that he's always represented. He's been in the House, this is his 40th year, I believe, in straight succession without a break.
You consider yourself still a Democrat?
Well, I tell everybody that I'm a damn poor Democrat and no Republican at all. And I don't know what that makes me. I voted for Strom Thurmond, and I got together a group and we organized a state and carried it for Goldwater, and we did the same thing for George Wallace. Now, when it comes down to being a Democrat like this crowd that's been running from up there, and that crowd in the United States Senate, our last 2 candidates, the ones that look like they will, and Teddy Kennedy. I'm not that kind of a Democrat.
Do you see anybody in the Democratic Party that you think would carry Georgia in a presidential election?
No. If they do, it would be an accident. Unless they'll put George Wallace on the ticket, and he'll carry it.
How about if George Wallace is not on the ticket, but actively campaigns for the ticket?
Well, let me tell you something. I find these people in politics will follow you as long as you're going their way. And you cross them up and they're through with you.
If Senator Goldwater had voted in favor of the Civil Rights Act in 1964, would you have supported him?
I think so. I don't think there's any doubt.
Do you think he would have done as well in Georgia?
Yeah, I think he'd done just about as well. They weren't voting for Goldwater. We didn't even like him. Or those of us who were out front didn't like him. We never did even consult him. We had no connection with him. We organized Democrats for Goldwater in Georgia. And I tell you, we didn't even have any affiliation with the Republican organization or the Republican headquarters. Only one time that we ever had called them over the telephone and talked with them. Some fella came along one day when I was up there and said he wanted to contribute to the campaign. And he was in the printing business and wanted to know if he could do some printing. And I said, well, everybody wants stickers. Print us up some stickers. Next time I went up there, it was a carload of stickers stacked up in a darn hotel. And we had no means of getting them out. We didn't even know what to do with them. We had so many. So I called up Republican headquarters and told them if they wanted them, come get them. And the fellow I was talking to told me, he says, well, we'll get a taxi and come up there and get them. I said, taxi hell. I don't know whether one truck will do it. He may need two. That was the whole connection we ever had with them. We didn't consult them in the beginning. They never came about us. And when the thing was over, they never thanked us or said a word to us, and we didn't either. And we were going. We were traveling on that basis. We let it be known we weren't Republicans.
Why did you organize the Goldwater campaign?
It was just a protest vote.
Okay, a protest against what?
Just a protest. Let the Democrats know where we stood.
I suppose the Republicans had run somebody like Rockefeller instead of Goldwater. You think you'd have still done the same thing?
I doubt it would have been any different. Because nobody was. I don't know of a single person that was for Goldwater in our group. Or even admired him.
What was it about Goldwater that you didn't like?
I just never did. The fellow somehow or other was just always a cold personality to me. I never did warm up to it. Now, Bo Calloway used to tell me what a fine fellow he was and how easy he was to get along with and all that, but somehow or other, I never met Goldwater, I never saw him, never heard him speak except on television. But he always left me as a rather cold personality. I never had warm up to him enough to even try to even meet the fellow.
Did you support Calloway?
No, I supported Maddox. I would have liked to. Calloway's a good man, he's been a good friend of mine, as folks have been. But he got me into shape to where if he'd have been elected, he'd have beat my congressman. He would have beat all my friends. And the only thing we could do to save our friends would go with Maddox. And my congressman up here at Athens, Bob Stevens, who was the nicest fellow you ever saw, he didn't have a chance until he got on that ticket with Maddox. If Calloway had run that off with anybody else, he'd have won. In the race. Ellis Arnold was in the race. If he had caught Ellis Arnold, why, he would have. But Maddox is more conservative than he is, you know. And these folks, don't like the idea of going Republican anyhow.
There's a lot of talk in the South, especially among Republicans, of a realignment, all the conservatives becoming Republicans and leaving the Democrats, and the Democrats becoming the liberal party in the South, or the black party, or both, and all of the conservative Democrats pulling out and joining the Republican Party. What's your view on that?
The Republicans aren't willing to do what's necessary to care for the South. As you know, the race issue hangs over the South like the sword of Damocles, it does now and always has. If you eliminate that, there wouldn't be any difference in the thinking of the Democrat, of the Southerners and the Republicans. I mean, it might be some, but I mean no material difference. But there's where the difference is, and the Republicans aren't willing to go far enough to ever get the South.
What do you think they'd have
now,
to do?
Now, Nixon, you know what Nixon did when he beat George Wallace and when he got elected, kept it out of the House of Representatives in 68. When he came to Charlotte and made that speech and let those people in North Carolina and Virginia and up in that area, he carried South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, and Florida with that one speech. And he had our old friend Strum going all over the South, making a speech saying that Nixon's just like I am, just like me. And the Augusta newspapers came out one morning with a big headline, "Nixon is like me," Strum says. But he convinced his people that he was in favor of freedom of choice. And in that speech at Charlotte, and that's the way he did it. Otherwise, George Wallace had it. We were in it. Now, it made some difference in Georgia. It cut us down from about, I've forgotten now, seemed to me like about, it cut us from a good bit above 50% of the vote to where we got a little bit better than, we got about 50%. I figured that speech cost us probably 5-10% of the vote. But we were so solid, nothing could have happened, could have changed this state. And you know, it's the only politics I've ever been in mixed in that Wallace campaign that I like. We only spent $15,000 the whole campaign, and we raised that money ourselves. The campaign could be raised. And I guess half of it was raised from selling all these trinkets that they have during this campaign. We're buying them out of Montgomery and selling them, the headquarters in Atlanta. Of course, we have to admit that the campaign cost more than that, but for this reason, we carried on no propaganda campaign. We got the benefit of all of his television speeches and things of that kind. We didn't carry a single ad in Georgia. So we had to get a petition signed, put his name on the ballot, and we submitted 225,000 names as quick as you know what happened. And we figured that whenever you had 220, we had to have 100 and something. And when they ran over us to sign the darn thing, we figured with that kind of a campaign committee, you didn't need any money or anything else. Nobody else would have it.
I think Wallace would have done just as well if he'd run again in 72 in Georgia.
Yeah. this as well. Mean on a third party ticket?
Right.
Yeah. Of course, Wallace and these fellas have all, they've checked pretty carefully, and they're probably right. They don't think the third thing still carry half a dozen states down south, maybe as a maximum. They don't think you can get it beyond that. But we haven't changed much down in Georgia.
What's Hermantown with your political rule in Georgia?
Well, I don't want to be quoted on this.
Okay.
Because right now it's for some personal reasons. Ordinarily I wouldn't mind. Because he and I have always gotten along fine, and I always said what it pleased, and sometimes it doesn't suit him, but he laughs at me and goes on. But cut that thing off a minute and I'll tell you why. Now, Herman Talmadge just hadn't got the strength in Georgia he used to have. I don't think he'll have any opposition this time, and he'll get by. And it would be more or less by default. Because I was talking to one of his friends the other day, that Herman was bragging that the polls were showing that he had 70% of the people with him. And he said, he told him, he said, Herman, I'm a damn fine brag about having 70% of the people with me when you haven't got any opposition. So, his people are disappointed. He hadn't been the fighter that they expected. And he hadn't scrapped enough for the old Georgia Southern ideas they expected. He has openly played to get the Negro vote. And a lot of us don't blame him because somebody's going to split that vote some of these days. It's not going to stay solid like it's been. And the next thing is, it's if he's got a few of them with him, it keeps him from having opposition. Now, the Watergate thing hurt your senator from North Carolina with the public generally. He was a hero for the first couple of weeks. They let that thing run too long. But Talmadge was able to sense it, and he ducked all those ladder meetings. He didn't ask any questions. And he wound up with the Watergate investigation helped him in Georgia. Helped him with a lot of young people because the thing that these politicians don't know is I told Talmadge a couple of years ago, we met at a football game, and he told me, he said, a bunch of women up there in your town, September was a year ago. So they were wanting to know how I stood on busing. He said, I told them everybody in Richmond County knew how I stood on busing. I said, well, Herman, half the people in Richmond County don't even know how you stand on anything. And I'd say a fourth of the people down there never heard of you. You've been up here now 7-8 years, and this picture changes. And them damn kids down there don't even know who Herman Talmadge is, much less know how you stand. And I said, you better do something to get your name out there in front of them, because that might be the margin you need. He's been making speeches in Georgia ever since. And he built his fences up. But Talmadge can't say that he heads a movement now like he used to, like George Wallace can say. And Talmadge can't say that he heads a movement like his father did. Talmadge's strength now is purely personal. He got a lot of friends, a lot of connections. Next thing is, he's lucky enough to have all the big corporations with him, because he usually follows the Trust Company and the Coca-Cola Company and all these folks that have got the real say-so in Georgia.
There's one story that he wanted to come back and run for governor for a second time.
That
some
is
time
correct.
Back, and the corporations, in effect, told him he better stay where he was.
Well, it was a little bit more than corporations. He would have bucked the corporations. But the type of people that hit him is, one called me just after he called him, and I expect a half a dozen. There were small town business people who every time he runs give him probably $1,000. And they called him up and said, Herman, if you run for governor, I'm through. Now they were the folks who whipped him. They wasn't the big corporations.
Why did they oppose him? I mean, was it the same reason they wanted him in Washington?
Coming back here? Well,
the story I heard is the corporations wanted him up there because he could do them more good up there.
Well, I think that's true, and that's the reason these people want him there. The next thing is, it messed up the local politics. You know, when you go out and get out into local politics and then come back, every fellow's already got him another horse, you know.
Does Talmadge get involved in gubernatorial elections
at
all?
He stays out.
Stays out
pretty good. Dick Russell was a master at that. And Herman's tried to follow Dick.
And staying out.
Mm-hmm.
And in Mississippi, we heard that Eastland, for example, does get very much involved in a very quiet sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
Effective, quiet sort of way.
I think Talmadge would under conditions, but so far he hadn't. He stayed out.
Is there anybody who sort of is a controlling influence within the Democratic Party in Georgia? Just a number of factions.
This darn thing is wide open now. It's wide open.
Would you have expected to see your friend Bob Stevens a few years ago supporting OEO legislation?
No, I get mail every time I see him. But, you know, Bob was educated to be a college professor, and that's what he is. And then he decided he didn't like that, and he studied law, practiced law. And his nature and disposition right now is not a lawyer or a politician, it's a college professor type. But he's a swell fellow. But he's always been more liberal than I am, I reckon. Although I might have supported OEO at the beginning, I don't know. But I sure wouldn't now.
25, am I correct that you did support Edward McIntyre for the county commission?
Yeah, and not only that, both of these we got two men in city council that supported Dents. Two Dent brothers. One of them's in the legislature and one's in the council. I supported both of them.
Anybody 25?
Of course, one thing is, isn't known very well, their mother and I were born on the same plantation. We got a long connection all the way back.
How about McIntyre?
I practiced law at Lewis for 12 years, Louisville, Georgia. McIntyre walked in here one day and he says, Mr. Harris, said, my mother knew you down at Louisville, told me who she was. And she said me to come tell you that you've got to support me. And I said, well, if she says so, I have, I will.
If anybody told you 25 years ago that you'd be supporting blacks for political office in Richmond County, what would you have said?
No, never had. That's never bothered me. As you know, I've always advocated giving them everything we got, except I don't believe in nesting together. I draw the line when it comes to social. I think they ought to have their churches, their clubs and organizations, and we ought to have ours.
How about schools?
Yeah, I do too. In the lower level, I don't think you can afford to in the university level.
But you can afford to have separate ones at the university level?
Oh, yeah. I mean below that. Well, you can in some sections. You take, we got counties in Georgia, there's not a nigger lives in it. You've got other counties where there are two or three families getting them out in the area, you know. Up until this movement to the cities, the black belt in Georgia, right across here, you got the extreme parts, you found very few Negroes, and you got north of Atlanta, you found very few. I'd say it would stretch from right along about this area here.
The Hart and Elbert County area?
Yep.
Southwest.
Right down across above Columbus. See, here's Columbus right here. See, it didn't come square across, it come like this, see? I can remember when this area here wasn't settled, most of it. I remember riding on the horse and buggy all day. Along about 1906, I couldn't see a thing but original forest trees and wild grass, and about every 5 or 6 miles you'd run across a house out there somewhere.
How do you assess the Republican Party in Georgia at this time?
Oh, I don't think it got any consequence. They've got an organization. They're well organized at the top, but they haven't got any privates.
More chiefs than Indians?
Yes, sir. Now, in Georgia, the Democrats are almost the opposite. You haven't got any chiefs. Now, you got a lot of would-be chiefs. A lot of people try to be chiefs. But you haven't got many. There's only one strong political factor in Georgia today, and that's Lester Matthews. And it's almost a personal thing.
You think he's going to be elected governor again?
Yeah, without a doubt. They haven't got a chance to beat him, unless he cuts his own throat.
What do you think is the key to his strength?
Basically, it's a race question. Then there's two other things that give him an added strength. As you know, people generally, they don't have confidence in the politicians anymore. And Watergate has finished up the little bit they did have. And all this mess has come out of it. The people believe two things about Maddox. They believe he's sincere in his religion, and they believe he's honest. And I don't know of another politician in Georgia they say that can measure up to him on those two things. Because average he doubts all of them, religion and honesty.
How important is the fact that Maddox is religious and people believe he's religious and is sincere in it? How important is that politically in Georgia?
Well, you got country Presbyterians and Methodists and Baptists in North Carolina, haven't you?
Right.
Yeah, and I know lots of them. And I tell you, whenever they get with you, you've got a finest political organization you ever saw. You can't call it an organization.
How
you get out here and talk to these country preachers, Baptists, Methodists, Presbyterians around these in the edges of these cities and in the country area. They fight you about matters.
How important is it, say, for Richard Nixon to have in the South, to have Billy Graham sitting in his corner?
It'll help, but Billy Graham, he doesn't have the personal grip on people, the last of my understanding.
Well, they've got a different position on race. Is that the big factor in that?
I don't think you would have if it didn't. Because I can remember when Billy Graham's position was just as strong as mine on race. For his father-in-law, old Dr. Bill, and I carried a running, on a running correspondence for years. And Billy ran a revival, and he ran one of his revivals in Atlanta when Herman Talmadge was governor. And it was segregated. And he later announced to his friends that if to have worldwide influence, you had to be for integration. And that's when he went on.
When McIntyre ran for county commission here, didn't he get a fair amount of white support?
Had to be elected.
Okay, how do you explain that?
Well, McIntyre ran once and got beat. 2 years later, he ran again. And do you know him? Have you met him?
I met him.
You know how black he is.
Right.
He went around here and hired him and got him rented some billboards, and he put the blackest damn picture up that you ever saw. And you know, it caught the attention of folks. They said, well, he's one nigger that didn't shame of his race. And it did. It caught fire. Some people, when they found out I was from McIntyre, they kidded me about it. And I wouldn't know how I explained it. I said, well, he's the right color. So were the dents. The dents are the right color. They're as black as they can be. There's no white blood in them. But of course that was said facetiously, but I'm not so sure it was as facetious as I thought it was at the time. But anyhow, McIntyre did. And the next thing, these dents. These dents, when any of these folks around here that they've been associated with and supported them in politics, when a member of their family dies, they show up. They come right in just like everybody else. They don't hesitate. When somebody's in trouble, you see them. But you don't ever see them trying to push themselves socially. Next thing about McIntyre, he's tied up with this Pilgrim insurance crowd. And that's an exceptional bunch of Negro people. Two or three people started that along about 1890. And it has been one of the strongest and one of the most reputable Negro insurance companies to be found anywhere. And they stand, well, as a matter of fact, I've been practicing law here 42 years, and I've never seen a suit against one of their policies in court here.
Is that an Augusta-based firm?
Yeah. I mean,
their home office is
home
here?
Home office is here. It's Augusta Bunch, an Augusta group. And one family controls it. But there's a lot of the others in it, you know. And, of course, what they've done, they've brought a lot of people in here that help run it. It's all Negro and there's no whites in it. No white stockholders here. I represent the president of the building. And try to steer him around so he won't lose control. That's the main thing, he and his family. That's the funny thing about me, you know, I've never lost a Negro client yet, and I got lots more than I had. I got a tax case I'm settling now, and the IRS talked about prosecuting him 2 or 3 years ago, and I went up there and I said, "What? How you expect to prosecute a Negro for fraud?" And down in the federal court in Augusta, with the head of the Citizen Council of America representing him, and his chief witness is a Jew auditor. I said, "You know damn well you can't whip that combination." So they didn't prosecute us. I don't know whether that had anything to do with it or not, but we're settling it anyhow now. A few days, I think.
Other than the governor, who are the most powerful people in the state politically? How powerful is the speaker, for example?
How's that?
How powerful is the speaker of the House?
Well, the speaker, the present speaker, now we had a speaker there that was in the legislature for a long time. He was there when I was there. He was there when I was speaker. I always took credit for training him. And he died last year. Now he was pretty influential because he'd been there such a long time. The present speaker is a nice fellow. And of course he's got a lot of power as a result of speaker.
Speaker appoint all committees?
Yeah.
How about committee chairman?
Yes, every one of them.
He appoints the chairman too?
Everybody. I was speaker under two different governors, and one of them, Ed Rivers, way back, he and I were close enough friends, we said what would please one another. Every time I wouldn't do what he wanted, he'd cuss me out and said, "Damn you," says, "you're more powerful than the governor," when the legislature's in session. But says, "The day adjourned," says, "I can make his dance."
Does the governor have much voice in the election of a speaker?
Sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. You know, we're pretty much like every other state. When you've got a strong personality as governor, he's almost got unlimited influence. When you got a weak governor, he's got practically none. Of course, if I was running for speaker, I always wanted to go with me. And the times I did run, I had. But I have, and when I was in the legislature, we have ganged up on the governor and beat him for either president of the Senate or speaker of the House.
Now, the lieutenant governor, does he appoint, how do committees in the Senate appoint?
They're appointed by the lieutenant governor.
Chairman also?
Mm-hmm.
Seniority is not a factor?
Oh, on both sides, they've got a semblance of seniority that they go by, but you're not bound by it. You don't have to. But it's generally, it's kind of customary, you know. Now, if somebody's dead set against you, don't give a darn how long he's been there. He's not going to step up to chairman. They fought Maddox, they raised sand with Maddox this last time because he took an old chairman and put another fellow in his chairman over it.
But he got away with it, right?
Oh, well. In my day, we played a little game. A fellow ran against me, and I appointed him chairman of the committee on halls and rooms. finally, he beat me and got to be speaker, and he made me chairman of the Committee of Horses and Rumors. And it was a standing joke.
Who has real power in Georgia from the standpoint of somebody who can, organizations have influence in the legislature? In most states we find it's usually banks, power companies.
Probably right now that banks have got more influence than all the rest of them put together. I mean, if it come down to shove. Back in my day, and up until now, and that's pretty much, at one time the bus and truck people, of course when I first went to the legislature, the railroad and insurance companies controlled when they wanted to. And then we saw them go down, we saw the bus and truck people come up, we saw the telephone people and the power people come into prominence. And we saw the banks come in. And of course in Georgia, in all my day, the Coca-Cola company has been one big factor.
They remain that?
And they're pretty strong now for two reasons. Two or three reasons. First reason is they weren't regulated. And number two, they didn't mind spending the money on politics. And number three, that group that owned the trust company, that owned the control of the Coca-Cola company,